first talk this morning is documenting recipes from Amina Metouchi and Matt Bettinson.
Last October, I was in Kabylie, in the village from which my paternal family originates, for the ceremonies ending the 40-day mourning period after my father's death. My extended family spent the previous day and night preparing the traditional couscous that they served to the neighbors and friends who come to visit and comfort the family of the deceased. No less than 600 people came by to offer their condolences and comforting words and to chant traditional prayers. Every visitor was given a full plate of couscous. And despite the sadness everyone was feeling, there was also much life and love around, thanks to the children mostly. This clip was recorded on the morning of that lunch offering. Each important moment in traditional Kabyle society is associated with food. Terefin, small pancakes that are brought to the family of the deceased on the evening of the wake before the burial. Tahbult, a sweet omelette which is given to a woman who has just given birth, and we top it with a mix of honey and orange blossom flowers for her and her baby to be stronger. And there are many other foods, of course. Food also appears in folk tales. In a recording, which you can find online, I can give you a link to that. A bad stepmother prepares terefin when she believes that her stepdaughters, who have been abandoned by the father in the forest, are dead, devoured by wild animals. And in the end of an alternative version of that tale, the little girls prepare a dish, thuntish, which is a traditional present, thank you offering, but instead of putting actual food in it, they poop in the pot, they cover that with a layer of delicious cream, and they send it to the stepmother, who's terribly angry when she realizes what's inside the pot. But the father tells her that she only got what she deserved, and the tale ends with, "What you did to them, they are not doing to you." Of course, in the online version, I got an alternative version, which is less offensive. But food is a very important part of our lives and a very interesting part of documentation on several levels. I won't review the literature, just refer you to Follock's review on food, which is in the Oxford Handbook of Fieldwork. She shows that nutritionists broach the question under the angle of diet and health, semiologists consider food as systems of communication, or they focus on systems of on symbolic oppositions. Anthropologists focus on food production under its economic, political, social aspects, on serving rituals and sharing, on preparation techniques, and so on. This is from this paper, mostly centered around what I would call horizontal transmission between co-participants or within communities. And but as the following excerpt from my cousin Tonsia, the woman in blue there, shows, there is also a vertical aspect to food and cooking, because food is also something which is deeply rooted in our memories of our past. So this is what she says. I'm going to play So let me, I cannot play everything because otherwise we won't have time, but as you can see from the parts which are bolded, she insists on memories from her childhood when they stood near the fire as kids and her grandmother would give them olive oil. She would tell
us tails, and we would eat those pigs with olive oil. We were in good health. We didn't fall ill. This diabetes didn't exist. There was no high blood pressure, no cholesterol, nothing. But now it's cookies and cakes, all this new food that we find in quantities. This is what makes people ill. This is what they consume in excess now. And she also says the Kabyle woman in the old days, she would put two flat loaves of bread to cook, and when her child arrived from school, she gave him a portion of bread. He would dunk it in oil and eat it with two dried figs. He would drink goat milk or cow milk. We were in good health in those times. We thrived, but now it's not the same anymore. What this point too is not only nostalgia for those lost moments and this food which is disappearing in cities, but something even stronger. It evokes childhood and the comfort and love we felt surrounded by our families. This is probably a universal feeling because, as you can see from this French 19th century writer, early 20th century writer, Marcel Proust, in this very famous episode of the Madeleine in remembrance of things past, there is also, this is very beautifully evoked in this text. Just look at the parts in yellow, which I'm going to read for you. No sooner had the warm liquid and the crumbs with it touched my palate than a shudder ran through my whole body, and I stopped, intent upon the extraordinary changes that were taking place. An exquisite pleasure had invaded my senses. Further on, and at once the vicissitudes of life had become indifferent to me, its disasters innocuous, its brevity illusory. This new sensation having had on me the effect which love has of filling me with a precious essence. He also says, I was conscious that it was connected with the taste of tea and cake, but that it infinitely transcended those savors. The taste was that of the little crumb of madeleine, which on Sunday mornings at Combray, because on those mornings I didn't go out before church time, when I went to say good day to her in her bedroom, my Aunt Leonie used to give me, to begin first in her own cup of real or of lime flower tea. But when, that's the end of the passage, when after, from a long distance past nothing subsists, after the people are dead, after the things are broken and scattered, still alone, more fragile, but with more vitality, more unsubstantial, more persistent, more faithful, the smell and taste of things remain poised a long time, like souls, ready to remind us, waiting and hoping for their moment amid the ruins of all the rest, and bear unfaltering in the tiny and almost impalpable drop of their essence, the vast structure of recollection. This is the power of food. It's a link to remembrance, joy, resilience, eternity. And this is not only what this writer is talking about, because imagine you are a migrant or a person trying to reconnect with her vanishing culture and language. On your journey, among your few immaterial possessions, there is food, or the memory of food, and there is language. That's why we decided to, that's how Zahwa started. Actually at a workshop in Melbourne in a session on app design coordinated by Stephen Byrne. Several apps were described, but most of them had to do with what I felt at the time were more men-oriented and more scholastic aspects of documentation. Having worked with women for 20 years and thinking about how I could introduce the app in the documentation process, it immediately appeared to me that cooking was central. In collaboration with Matt Bettinson, who did the development, we came up with a scenario based on my experience in the field and as a member of the community. We named it after my grandmother, Zahwa. So here's the scenario. Taos is a young woman, she's starting college, she's homesick and would like to cook the traditional recipes her grandma Zahwa used to cook for her. Thankfully, she has her Zahwa app where she has her grandma's voice explaining her recipe in Kabyle. She sets the app and starts gathering the ingredients and she's feeling happy. last spring she went to the village for a few days and asked her grandma for her Tamil food recipe. They set up the ingredients, Taos took photos of all the stages, while Zahwa cooked the recipe as well, and Taos also took the final picture of the dish. Then, after having eaten in front of warm coffee, they went through the photos, selected the ones they considered the best, and Taos recorded her grandma explaining the ingredients, utensils, and stages of the recipe in Kabylie. Then Taos took a picture of Zahwa and set up her profile for future recipes. She saved the recipe on her phone, uploaded it, and shared it online. Now, every time Taos wants to cook Tamil food, she has her grandma's recipe, voice, gestures. Taos speaks her language fluently, even though she's bilingual in Arabic and mostly speaks that language now that she's at university in the capital city. But she's so happy to listen to her grandma's voice, especially as her grandma added information about the significance of this dish that she wasn't aware of. But Ines is not so lucky. She was born in France 16 years ago, and her parents haven't spoken to her in Kabylie because they thought this would help her integrate. She can understand the language but feels insecure speaking it. She's so happy that her cousin Taos is sending her videos of their grandma's recipes. She can learn the language of food and be fluent at least in the kitchen. And this makes things easier with her own mother, who can be so annoying at times when she says Ines cannot go to such or such party. Her mom, who's now interested in recording her own recipes in Kabylie. So now, how is Zahwa different from the usual documentation of recipes? My experience for 20 years was based first, in documentation and fieldwork, showed me that first, when I started to work on cooking, it was first a way of to vary genres, given my involvement in working with women. I wanted some special mood aspect negation forms that only appear in procedural discourse, and I thought, well, I'm going to record cooking because I know this is when they're going to use them. I wanted to use natural speech. I studied language during activity, post-activity, discussions on cooking, then and now with a woman and her daughters. You know, I left the videos just for souvenirs, as I always do. But then, working on this app, I was in the US for about 3 months recently, and I decided to get some suggestions and to discuss this with other people from other cultures. So I went to the Northern Arapaho Wind River Reservation and talked with Yolanda, Berta, Sadie, and Allison as well, who's a guy but also had things to say about that. And I went to Alaska as well to talk with Ruth Ridley. So the question of food is very closely linked to language, which can be shown by a small experience that happened to me on my first day, on the day of my arrival here. I was talking with a lady in the building, and she told me she was Greek and she had married a Filipino man, and she had been here for more than 40 years, and she had learned to cook the Filipino cooking, and she said, but I also cook some Greek recipes. So I started asking her, what do you cook? And she was only able to give me three different names of recipes and wasn't very sure about how to do them right, and then she said, well, my sister knows, she's back there in Greece. And so I realized that asking about cooking was also the same thing as asking about language when people are in situations where they're insecure about their cultural groundedness. It's also something which is very important and emotional. So of course I changed conversations and we talked about something else. So on the Northern Arapaho Reservation, I had a few suggestions given to me by several people. So Yolanda, who you see with her dog on the picture, she was a school teacher, and in a discussion we had about this Zahwa app project, she told me she was very excited by the idea and was planning on using it in the classroom with the kids to prepare food, which is something I hadn't thought about before. I mean, we had mentioned doing this in classrooms, but it had just not occurred to me in between. And so also Sadie Bell, who's an elder who was there for a consultancy on another matter, was very interested to when I told her that I was involved in working with women in my own culture, and especially on intergenerational transmission of cultural knowledge, because this is also what this app is about. She said she felt that women elders were not sufficiently contacted for those kinds of projects, and whereas they had the knowledge, the language skills, and the desire for that. She told me she would gladly use the app with her family as soon as a working version was ready, especially with her granddaughter. And the encounter with Ripley and Freya Banks was very, very intense too. We spent several hours in her home cooking and talking about food. Sorry, both of them are going together. And we also talked about
they get it in the fall time, like September, October, when there's no snow on the ground, and caribou, they get it like November when there's snow on the ground. So like my mom would get, they were
so sorry, I have to cut them short, but you can access them afterwards. But from all those conversations that we had and the experience I had with Ruth, the comparison between the use of an app as we were thinking of it and the traditional documentation process shows very clearly that the use of an app is much more empowering, because it allows self-documentation of recipes with a smartphone, which is everyday technology, with immediate saving and sharing possibilities, immediate use and diffusion, and a potential for intergenerational transmission, not only of cooking skills and cultural materials, but of language, especially in context of language loss and revitalization. It empowers elder women. It fosters intergenerational collaboration. It allows language skills to be passed on through cooking, vocabulary, set phrases. For dormant speakers or super learners, this is an opportunity to read, to learn the language of cooking, even if they cannot learn the whole range of communication situations in the language. So now I will leave a moment to Matt for the presentation of the app itself. This will be very quick, but you can ask him also at other moments.
Aloha. Okay, so I'll be brief with this. I'm going to present Zawa in more detail at 10:20 in the upstairs Kayela room. But the thing about Zawa is it's not a traditional app in the sense that you go to the app store to install it. It's a next generation app that's powered by web technology. So what you can actually do, and I'll give you the link for this afterwards, is go straight to this recipe on your phone. I don't know how well it works on an iPhone. It'd be interesting to find out. But this is what the app looks like. I've got two recipes in it. We'll just go straight to this moose stew recipe, but I'll also switch the view to landscape, and let me make it bigger. Okay. Oh, of course. Helps if you plug the sound in, yes.
Ridley, Eagles, and Gigi, 66 years old, Gigi,
I'm going to move it forwards by myself, but the idea here is that the slides will move automatically based on the users having made a recipe with it. So I'll just move
Sean,
my hand.
I'll
just keep going. So step by step, we have these recipes as a series of images that have been narrated. I can move around to play these. But the process of making a recipe, you can either import the videos, which is what I've done here, which is why you see them in the kind of wrong aspect ratio, or you can more usually take them within the app, which is a very easy process of actually just tapping a button and taking all the pictures, and then you see a viewer like this and just narrate the audio over the top. Ah, okay, no problem. But I'll just invite you. If you see that URL there, can I make it bigger? I can't make it any bigger.
But we can give it to you at the coffee break if you want.
But the big idea from this that I want to get across is that this kind of URL could be sent from somebody to anybody else without having installed the app, and you'll immediately come up to view that recipe and you'll be able to do that on your own phone. Do you want this back?
Yes, please.
No, I didn't see that.
So now we can answer questions. Sorry for slightly overlapping on the question period, but I wanted to project all the acknowledgement for all the people who participated in this and were so helpful, and I hope you can participate as well and suggest things. Thank you.
My name is KK, and I'm a language teacher for the Tlingit language. And we collectively as a cohort have been doing a lot of trying to incorporate our language into our everyday traditional activities. Now, I was wondering, when you're doing this and you're sharing this link, for us, we would probably be doing, you know, like Saknin or something that would be traditional to our areas, making breads or making things that are traditional to our area, seaweed and eggs and things. But where does the information, is it stored in the app? Can you access this so we can, when the app becomes available, we can enter our recipes in, and then folks can download the app, and there's an unlimited access to this, so it'll go out to people so we can share the app with our families and they can go home and use this. Is there a cost associated with the app, or is it just something that we can, is it just a resource, a traditional resource that's an app?
So far we don't have any plans to charge for access to it, but that depends how popular it gets. It'd be a nice problem to have. But it basically, the app works online and offline, so you can complete the user offline to do your work, and then it sends all of the stuff up into the cloud and it stores it there. You can get access to that material elsewhere if you want, send it, share it, etc. No cost, free to use for everybody. We would say that in the fullness of time, we've got plans to make it so that you can make it institutional versions of it. So you might have a community project, like in a school. This is something that comes up all the time, and we're already doing that work in Australia. So schools want a version of it that just has, you know, their branding on it and has some extra features to enable sort of grouping people together in classes and that kind of thing.
Is it just photo and audio, or is there also
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It's photos, audio, and video. You can actually, what's that thing called on Twitter? Bind, very short videos. It does that too, which is actually very useful for procedural discourse, including recipes, because you want to show the action of having done something. So record these short videos. As far as text, Zawa's part of a suite of applications that we've proposed that work on a common data model. So it's a bit too much to get into here, but we would foresee somebody taking that recipe and then wanting to transcribe it using another one of our tools, and it contributing towards some workflow. Again, come along at 10:20 upstairs, and I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, I think the basically at the start of the app conception, I was very insistent on the fact that I really wanted the app to be usable in a context where women are illiterate, because this is what happens in my region. So, and also the first thing was to make people feel well and have pleasure doing it. So that was the first thing. And then the other things, very important things for linguistics, like tagging and translating, which allows comparing recipes, comparing linguistic structures, vocabularies, dialectal variation, and so on. This is also something which is taken care of in the model. But it's like also, it doesn't go on the front row, so that it doesn't prevent people who feel uncomfortable with writing from using the app.
One question.
Sorry, just a quick question. Is it iPhone or any kind of phone?
It should be any kind of phone, but it's not tested on iPhones because I don't have one. most of the target audience, I tend to test this technology extensively in Taiwan, and no one has iPhones there either. But in principle, the idea is that these things, that, you know, it's cross-platform, it'll run on any phone. It should run on a Windows phone too. But
and on a computer.
Oh, of course, on a computer. Yeah.
So if people don't have smartphones,